Okay, welcome to In Plain Sight. Jeremy here in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. You should go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, send the fundage to keep free speech alive, to enjoy excellent broadcasts like you hear on RBN. Send your money order or check payable to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. And this is our Tuesday night broadcast, where, as advertised, we have live the Patrick and Jeremy Show joining us from abroad, fighting crime and analyzing politics, Dr. Patrick Slattery. Welcome. This is the part where you thank you, Jeremy.
I'm not sure if I've got the greatest internet connection. Let me know if things go wrong. I'll reconnect.
You're coming in, but I can tell it's a little wavery. We'll give it a whirl. We all love live radio, don't we?
Oh yeah, I'll reconnect if I need to.
All right. It's been a hell of a long weekend. I covered a lot of stuff last night on just tremendous amounts of arrests of college students on campuses across the U.S. and how I compared it to George Floyd. Tonight, just openly admitting we didn't have a lot of time to prep for this, but we're just going to go with whatever's coming in here. There's more at Columbia University. Black mass students allegedly seized Columbia University. I got this headline from The Stormer, and he includes a variety of tweets here from X. Students at Columbia University have occupied Hamilton Hall. Today, the university president explicitly said to students the school would not be divesting and threatened to suspend students protesting. The last time this building was taken over by student protests was in 1968. I would assume that's the Vietnam War protest. But divesting, the protesters are calling for the college to stop supporting Boeing, for one thing. So, and I covered that a little bit last night. From a Palestinian youth movement on X, they tweet, Columbia University students have taken over Hamilton Hall. The escalation is in line with the uprising in 1968, 1985, and 1996, which Columbia repressed and celebrates today. Columbia repressed all of those uprisings. The 68 was the Vietnam War, obviously. What was 85 and 96? Those were similar Palestinian protesters, weren't they? A protest for Palestinians.
Oh, I don't know. 85, 96, 85. 85 is not a particularly important year in the Israeli-Palestinian struggle. Who knows what it was?
Well, we know 68 was Vietnam, and I'm trying to figure out, like, they're comparing it to these other protests from the past. What did we say, 85? So let's 85. Just look it up and see. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 85 might have been a generic Cold War thing, anti-nuclear. It could have, you know, been anti-nuclear. If you're talking about late 90s, there were anti-globalization protests here and there.
Uh-huh. All right. Columbia University. Well, currently they're protesting against Gaza's slaughter and the fact that the U.S. government and the university actually supports this. So, and you have black mass students taking it over. The Stormer goes to the New York Post.
Yeah, and the thing is, are they students? You know, if they got black right. masks, who are they? And well, if they get arrested, we'll find out. But the Antifa people are a bunch of drug addicts. They're not Ivy League students. So we'll see.
Right. And that, That's exactly where we're going with it, is Antifa and BLM are both militarized arms of the Jewish-dominated system. We saw this in COVID and George Floyd, Summer of Floyd, patron saint of fentanyl and crack. That the BLM were the shock troops, and if you attack them, the government will come down on you hard. And so, are these people infiltrating the student protests? That's kind of where we're going with it, right? If you want to skip to the point, you're currently on mute. So let me read the first part of this post article. A huge mob of masked anti-Israel protesters broke into an academic building at Columbia University and seized it early on Tuesday, hours after the school finally began suspending students who refused to vacate the tent encampment that brought campus life to a halt. Dozens stormed into Hamilton Hall and sealed themselves in shortly before 1 a.m., with some using barricades, chairs, and tables to block others from getting inside, according to footage on social media. So compare what these black mask people are doing with what the tent protesters are doing. Right. So I think a working theory here is that, you know, the government's arm of shock troops are now attacking, they're infiltrating and making the pro-Palestinian or anti-genocide movement look like a bunch of terrorists.
Well, and that could be. The thing is, if the people wind up getting arrested, then their identities come out, and then it comes out whether or not they are students indeed. So we'll find out. The thing about the Antifa is the Antifa that we were seeing over the past several years, these people were they actually were pretty pro-Israel, so they're not the type of people who would be protesting against Israel. Now, there are, I guess you could call them black bloc. There were anarchists that you started seeing, I guess, in the late 1990s. You'd see them in demonstrations. I remember the G20 anti-G20 demonstration, some other demonstrations from I guess in the anti-Iraq war demonstrations in the first decade of this century, you would see what we would call anarchists. We weren't calling them Antifa, but anarchists. And there may be, and they look the same. There may be various different groups of these people who dress in black, and you could get some who would be motivated to demonstrate against Israel, the big question is, are they Columbia students or are they not Columbia students? And if it turns out they're not Columbia students, I guess the narrative could be that, oh, well, these demonstrations are spreading beyond the Columbia students themselves, but they're still, you know, it's still the same thing. It's still the same thing. But if they're not Columbia students, then they very well could be agent provocateurs. Because the thing is, you've had these encampments. I mean, this has been... The symbol of these demonstrations have been tents. You know, you set up a tent in the quad in the, you know, the central plaza of the university and spend the night outside and you just stay there. And this has been something that I guess did it start at Columbia? It started at one of these schools during the month of April, because you've had demonstrations and whatnot that have been going on since October, but they became encampments during the month of April, and those have spread to, I'm sure, well over 100 colleges now. And so that's been the thing. And that's where you've been seeing arrests, and by now hundreds of arrests. And the arrests can really have negative consequences for students, because when you're doing your FAFSA, your federal something student loan application, federal application for student loan, I don't know what it's an acronym for, but one of the questions is about, do you have a police record? Have you been arrested? And so this could, and practically everybody at school is, well, maybe not everybody, but the vast bulk of people at school are getting some sort of financial aid. And, you know, if they lose the financial aid, if they, then they can, even if they're not formally kicked out of school, then the school becomes unaffordable for them and they can't go. Because a school like Columbia is going to have a price tag of something like $70,000 per year. And so only the very rich are going there without student aid. Most of these people are getting considerable student aid. So we'll see what happens there. I'm very curious to see whether any of these people get arrested, the people who have actually broken laws and broken windows and gained entry that way. If these are actually students, and if they're not students, then they're very likely, it's just very likely the same type of thing as January 6th, where you had paid provocateurs who break things themselves, but then, you know, also become bad examples for the people around them. So we'll see about it. We'll see what happens.
I mean, some of them could be students approached by the Fed. I mean, obviously the U.S. government is against these protests. So as you mentioned, you know, they've been going on long enough for the FBI to formulate a plan and infiltrate them. And probably they could have recruited some of the students on the campus. So if you see arrests en masse, you're only going to get the media coverage of the actual students that were recruited in this program. That's kind of the way I see it. I agree with you, and you took the words out of my mouth, that it was similar to January 6th, where you have a legitimate protest, people legitimately wanting to protest peacefully, and the federal government infiltrating it. It's the same thing, it's the same playbook as all the protests against Trump, where you have one or two guys parading a Nazi flag, and that gets plastered all over the media, and then the boomers just lose their stuff, and they say, "Well, these protests, you know, the boomer libtards, that is, lose their stuff," and they say, "Well, these protests are really Nazi." So I think that's what we're seeing here, is an infiltration by the feds of a legitimate protest. Just like January 6th. And again, the majority of these people are probably provocateurs, but you could have legit students that were recruited into this and offered vast sums of money or whatever to participate in this. And they're just going to throw them under the bus when they're arrested. They're not going to back these students up. Just like a lot of January 6th protesters that entered the Capitol and went along with that, they're being thrown completely under the bus now. So it's interesting that what's happening to the right, or what happened to the right 4 years ago, the right meaning the conservative Trump supporters, is now happening to the left as they protest the Israeli genocide of Palestinians.
So, oh gosh, where was I going with this? Dr. Duke has been talking about this. Which school was it at? Was it at Emory, or it was at one of these schools where they had the pro-Israel students come, and they tend to be Jewish, the students, right? They come and they're wrapped in Israeli flags, and they were getting in the face of of the pro-Palestinian demonstrators. So you get some of this and shouting back and forth. And one of the people from the pro-Israeli side just started shouting, maybe even sarcastically or whatever, yeah, kill all the Jews, right? Kill all the Jews, kill all the Jews. Well, then people reported to the university that they heard somebody saying, kill all the Jews. And so based on that, the university called in the police, and the police arrested dozens of the anti-genocide demonstrators. But there's video evidence circulating around that the person who was saying kill all the Jews was a pro-Israeli demonstrator, a pro-genocide demonstrator.
Yeah, again, the same playbook where a legit protest is co-opted and made to look like something horrible the media can flash all over your TV screens and telephone screens. And so the conservatives, some Trump supporters, not all boomers, honestly, in your rural areas, you have a lot of younger people. You have a lot of millennials that support Israel and are pro-Trump, pro-America. And these protests are being painted as, leftist woke protests that are against America, against Israel, because the two are conflated in their eyes. And so I think that's what we're seeing here with this occupation in Colombia. We're up on the break now, but let's get back to this on the other side and take some calls. 512-248-8252. We'll take selective calls because we want to keep it classy on the Patrick and Jeremy Show.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
Hi. Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Awake every morning and the cold winds cover me. All I've got's a ghost of what could be. If you could see the lights shining.
We're back to the Patrick and Jeremy Show live, and we're covering the occupation of these black masked individuals breaking windows at Columbia University. We were comparing it to January 6th. I want to strike a comparison to the protests against Trump in 2016 and even 2017 at the inauguration in Charlottesville in 2017. Where you had a legit group of protesters in Charlottesville that were protesting, you know, pretty much for the right of white people, I would say. That was the core of the protest. There were a lot of Southern people there that supported the South that didn't want Robert E. Lee statue removed. But the overall gist was this was the, you know, the pro-white community protesting for you know, some type of political representation. And so they sent in Antifa at Charlottesville, you know, to go against the right. They had a couple of provocateurs on the right holding Nazi flags, that type of thing, to make them look bad. But the appeal in going against the Trump campaign and against Charlottesville, the appeal was to the left, to make the right look like a bunch of Nazis. So in this particular situation, the appeal is to the left. The appeal is to the left and the appeal is to the right. Hold on, I got that wrong. Let me go back. During the Trump protests and during Charlottesville, the appeal was to the left, right? They wanted regular Americans who just wanted to stand up against immigration and, against these foreign wars who happen to support Trump to look like Nazis. They wanted in Charlottesville for these regular people who, you know, didn't want our statues torn down, our white heritage destroyed, and who wanted the rights of whites to organize politically. The appeal was to the left in these protests by in introducing Antifa and making the right look bad. In this particular instance, with the pro-Palestinian or anti-genocide protesters, they're appealing to the left. No, I'm sorry, they're appealing to the right. Been a long day. The current protests against genocide, they're appealing to the right wing to make these people look like Antifa, to make these people look like the same type of people that participated in the George Floyd riots that caused much destruction and chaos in the United States. So let me reiterate. In Charlottesville, the appeal was to the left to make pro-white demonstrators look like Nazis. And in these protests, the infiltration is to appeal to the right, to make the pro-Palestinian or anti-genocide protesters look like a bunch of Antifa thugs that they witnessed 4 years ago. Did I get that out right? Hit me back.
Let's see. Am I muted? You made your point.
No, you got you're coming in.
Okay. So in in Charlottesville, there was a guy who was walking around with a Nazi flag, and nobody knew who he was. And he was never doxxed. You know, like most of the people who went to Charlottesville got doxxed. There was like an entire industry that grew up around this, doxing people. There was something that I guess Vincent James, who's on Cozy TV along with Nick Fuentes, they went into there's this Jewish group. It's called the Lawyers Guild, but it's run by Jews. It's very thoroughly Jewish, and they go to demonstrations and they wear these they glow green hats and maybe vests. And I remember the first time I ever saw them was at Charlottesville. And, you know, I'd gone to Charlottesville, but I got there late and I wound up just covering it for the Daily Stormer. It's not as if Andrew Anglin sent me there, but I got there kind of late. So I wasn't able to hook up with Dr. Duke or anyone else. And so myself and my companion, we just walked around with Black Lives Matter. We just walked around. We really didn't know what had gone on. We wound up arriving at the scene of where Heather Heyer had gotten hit by a car. We didn't know anybody had gotten hit by a car. We didn't know why people were so agitated. But I do remember seeing these people walk around with green hats. I'll get to that after the break.
Yep, that I'm really sorry.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yogavaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Back to In Plain Sight, the Patrick and Jeremy Show on your Tuesday night broadcast. Let me just reiterate what I was saying. I've collected my thoughts. Both Charlottesville and the 2020 election protests, January 6th. You know, these were pro-white demonstrators, and they were a threat to the system of Jewish power, and so. The appeal was to the left and painting these people as Nazis. So currently, now that they see the left turning on them, and you know the left being these pro-Palestinian or anti-genocide protesters, they want to make them look like Antifa to the right. They see the right wing taking power. They see Trump taking power, and they're scrambling to try to maintain some sort of pro-Israeli narrative here. That's kind of where I was going with it.
Yeah. So, for instance, with Charlottesville, you had one or maybe two guys walking around with a Nazi flag that were never identified. Every, you know, all these other people were identified and doxed, and this whole industry went up around it. One of the things I was mentioning just before the break was, I think it's called the Lawyers Guild or something like that. And I remember seeing them they were right there when Heather Heyer got killed. They were embedded with the Black Lives Matter and Antifa demonstrators. And I remember talking to one and asking, you know, what's up? What are you doing here? And they say, oh yeah, we're just here to observe. But actually. What Vincent James was reporting, and they're all over these college demonstrations as well. This is actually a group that it's probably connected to the Mossad, but they're not there to observe. They're there to dox. That's what they're there for. And it was if you go back and you look at the Heather Heyer, you know the videos, because I became obsessed, even though I when I was there, I didn't know that it had happened. And I was on the scene maybe, I don't know, like half an hour, 45 minutes after it had happened. When I had, my friend and I had been up like three blocks north of there at what was called, I guess it was called Jackson Park. And that's where an open Antifa group called Redneck Revolt was there. And I had taken pictures of Dwayne Dixon from the University of North Carolina. I took a picture of him walking around with his AR-15. And then some girl with a machete came up to me and told me to put my effing phone down. But so you had at Charlottesville potential provocateurs who were there to make the demonstrators look bad by carrying around Nazi flags, which had nothing to do with this demonstration. And then, of course, you had Antifa who were there to rile up the the Black Lives Matter people. Now, Black Lives Matter obviously had some, you know, Jewish direction in its leadership, but was largely just a bunch of, you know, relatively unorganized black people walking around. But the Antifa came, and one of the things the Antifa did was help arm the Black Lives Matter. So the guy, what was it, Deontay Harris, what was his name? Something like Deontay Harris, who was the guy who wound up clubbing some 65-year-old white man who was carrying a Confederate flag. He clubbed him in the head, and then he got briefly knocked down and kicked a couple of times, and then rewarded with $150,000 of GoFundMe money. But that guy, he testified that he had been given that flashlight by somebody in a black mask. So they were doing that at the Trump the Trump inauguration, and I was at the Trump inauguration as well. You had a lot of people, you know, a lot of people were demonstrating against Trump, and that's fine. I had gone to the second Bush, George W. Bush inauguration, and I was demonstrating against him. And I went to the second Nixon inauguration as a Boy Scout, and I was participating in the inauguration, but my mother and my brother were demonstrating against it. It's perfectly fine to demonstrate against an inauguration, but what was going on at the Trump inauguration was you had all these Antifa people who were turning it violent and burning cars, and it wasn't too hard to get the local blacks from D.C. to participate in violence, to participate in blocking intersections and whatnot. So you had that. But the thing is, the media could have made Black Lives Matter. They could have made the counter demonstrators at Charlottesville or the counter inaugural demonstrators. They could have made them look bad if they had chosen to, but they didn't. They didn't choose to make them look bad. But in this case, and what you're noting is the Antifa type people seem to be getting embedded into the into the anti-genocide demonstrators in order to make them look bad. And on January 6th, you had Antifa type people, Black Bloc type people, who did go in and break windows, at least on the east and the west side of the Capitol, the back side of the Capitol. I've examined the video, and there's plenty of video, and the people who were breaking windows on the back side of the Capitol were definitely Antifa types, and the MAGA people were stopping them, and so they were there to make the MAGA people look bad. And then on the east side of the Capitol, which is the front of the Capitol, you did have the BLM/Antifa guy from Utah, the black guy from Utah. What was his name? Sullivan, John Sullivan. I mean, I don't think he was actually breaking windows, but he was with the people who were breaking windows. And the people who were breaking windows seemed to be Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. But who have their own, they aren't Antifa types there, but they also had Fed links. So there's no doubt that in all of these big demonstrations we've been seeing that Fed linked groups are playing a role, and they're always playing a role of escalating, you know, whether they are agent provocateurs who are there to make the group look bad, or whether they are there as counter demonstrators fighting the group, they are there to escalate. And it seems to me, and I guess this is your point, that the system, the powers that be, the Jewish dominated system, wants these. They couldn't stop these demonstrations from spreading, So they can't stop it from spreading, but they want it to escalate in such a way as to justify calling in the police to smother them out. And I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, they're using hard power because now the threat is coming from the left, whereas before the threat was coming from the right. So they're attacking the threat, and this to me indicates a shift of Jewish power to supporting right wingers, Trump people, Christian Zionist types, your Sean Hannity types, to painting these anti-genocide protesters as being the same as Antifa and BLM. And so now, what does that mean? What happens when Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson come out, you know, in opposition to this genocide? They're going to be drugged through the mud, degraded, and you know, pushed in the same category as the BLM and Antifa. I think that's my overall point. And you're catching it. You're catching my drift.
I am catching your drift. And I had this, trying to find this. I had an article up just a bit ago from, where is this from? I guess it's RT, so maybe I should go back to RT. But RT has an article about Trump. And Trump, for months, had just been doing the whole, this would have never happened. It would have never happened if I had been president. And not saying very much specific. Then over the past couple of weeks since these demonstrations happened, he started going very anti-demonstrator and you know, calling them a disgrace and all of this. And you know, it was at the same period of time that he and he said Dick Johnson, Speaker of the House Dick Johnson, whose given name is Mike, but everybody knows he's a dick, and that they were supporting that Dick Johnson was doing such a great job and passing this legislation to lend money. We're lending money. We're going to lend it at interest. We're going to do so well. We're going to be winning. Lend money to Ukraine because they're good to pay it back. So he's been playing this really negative role. On my show earlier today, I said, you know, if the election was today, I wouldn't vote for Trump. I'd vote for Jill Stein of the Green Party because at least she's at least she got arrested. She went to one of these demonstrations at Washington University of St. Louis and got herself arrested. And that's a big deal. There's an article in RT, and it's Trump doesn't rule out cutting aid to Israel. So it's not that Trump said anything particularly based, but he was interviewed by Time magazine, and Time asked him, said, you know, like a month ago or so, Trump told an Israeli newspaper that Israel needs to finish up its war. You got to finish up now, because Israel was losing international support. So it couldn't continue. And so what Trump said is, I think that Israel has done one thing very badly, public relations. Trump told the outlet, adding that he thinks the Israeli military shouldn't be sending out pictures every night of buildings falling down and being bombed, and then asked whether he would rule out withholding or applying conditions to U.S. military aid to Israel in order to bring the war to a conclusion. Trump said no, he wouldn't rule it out, and then he launched into a scathing critique of Netanyahu. Well, his critique of Netanyahu, it might be scathing, but it's not exactly based. He said, I had a bad experience with Bibi. What was the bad experience? Well, that Netanyahu wouldn't join him in the assassination of General Soleimani. That was something I never forgot. It showed me something. So and then, you know, he continued to criticize Netanyahu. So it's not exactly based. It's certainly not anti-genocide. He's not criticizing Netanyahu specifically for the, you know, you could say indirectly, but certainly not specifically for the genocide. You know, he's criticizing the public relations aspect of having images of buildings collapsing going out every night, but he's not really specifically criticizing the genocide. He did say Netanyahu was rightfully has been criticized for what took place on October 7th, and I think it's had a profound impact on him despite everything, because people said it shouldn't have happened. Israel has the most sophisticated equipment. Everything was there to stop that, and a lot of people knew about it, you know. Thousands and thousands of people knew about it, but Israel didn't know about it, and I think he's being blamed for that very strongly. So he seems to be hinting that there was prior knowledge that the attack was going to happen, and yet it didn't get stopped. So he's saying some weird things. I don't know. I mean, at this point, if I was a betting man, I would guess that Trump is going to maybe he's going to try to position himself as being the pro-Israel candidate, which is absolutely retarded. There's nothing he has to gain by being the pro-Israel candidate, except maybe a little bit of Jewish money, which at the end of the day, he really doesn't need. What he does if he differentiates himself from Biden by being the pro-Israel candidate, then it puts the anti-genocide people who have been deserting Biden saying, well, okay, well, at least Biden is trying to slow this down. He's the lesser of two evils, because Trump is going to make it worse. So it's retarded. But, you know, Trump has a very, very broad streak of retardation. So anyway, I wanted to bring in that article from RT. I'll kick it back to you, Jeremy.
Let's go to the calls. If we can, Julie, let's skip this last break and bring on Vinny in Indiana. Vinny in Indiana, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeremy. Hi, Patrick. Hey, I wanted to mention what's going on in some of these congressional races. The one here in Indiana that everybody's interested in is John Hostetler. I just read some articles that AIPAC is going apeshit because they actually – John Hostetler might actually win. They're spending $500,000. AIPAC set up a separate entity called United Democracy Project, because I guess the AIPAC brand is getting kind of spoiled. The commercials are fairly aggressive, but I don't think they're going to be that effective. You can go on and look up the United Democracy Project and look at some of their campaign commercials. They had a big defeat last week. I guess it's Jessica Lee. I don't know if she's somewhere on the West Coast. I don't know, Oregon, Washington, or California, somewhere. She beat the AIPAC candidate with a ton of money. Her name was Patel, and beat her kind of handily. And it's like Jessica Lee, like, she's like a far, far lefty. But she's opposed to any foreign aid for Israel. So that was kind of shocking. And Rosa Nathaniel made a point.
An incumbent named Summerlee from Pennsylvania. And she beat a woman named Patel, an Indian immigrant woman, in spite of considerable AIPAC funding.
You know, Brother Nathaniel, his thing this week was that there hasn't been a Republican candidate who's talked about Jewish power, an elected congressional or senatorial candidate, since Charles Percy back in Illinois, who actually mentioned the Israeli lobby or the Jewish lobby. And, you know, like someone like Ron Paul, he was a general libertarian. He was just opposed to war in the military-industrial complex. He would not go out and say, well, it's the Jews. I mean, John Hostetler wrote a book and said, it's the Jewish lobby, folks. You know, if he could get back into Congress as a Republican, that would be something.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of him when he was in Congress before, but I have come across some of these this information that you're presenting. And I fully agree. That would be massive to have somebody on the Republican side who's got the guts to say some of these things. And it seems that he's really the only person out there who's willing to do that. And if he does it, then he might have an influence on some of these other people, the Matt Gaetz or Tom Massey or...
they might up their game a little bit.
Or, yeah.
They might up their game a little bit. Yeah. And the other campaign you got to really pay attention to is the Kucinich race in Cleveland. I mean, they've already had their primary, but he's running them against Max Miller. Max Miller is a freshman. He's a freshman congressman. He's like one of the most absolutely aggressive.
So who's running against?
Jewish. He's running against Max Miller.
Who?
Max Miller who's running used against? To be in Kucinich.
Okay, Dennis Kucinich, all right.
The primary was already held. And Max Miller is a very aggressive Jewish, Israel all the way, he's always calling out the squad for not supporting Israel and all that sort of thing. He's a real showboat. But he used to be in the Trump White House, and he actually goes around to these Trump rallies, and he opens up the Trump rally and gets, puts out the Israel first line. And if he could be defeated by Kucinich, I think that would be a huge wake-up call to Donald Trump. Politico has a really good article on Max Miller. He's a real hothead. As a young man, he had several run-ins with the law as a teenager and college student. How he ever got into the White House with security clearance, because Jewish privilege, and his grandfather is worth like $6-7 billion. Was a big he just passed away. He was a big real estate mogul in Ohio. And this another thing is he just got married. His father-in-law won the Republican primary for the Senate. His name is Bernie Moreno, and he's from Colombia, and his family back in Colombia were like really connected high up in the Colombian government. And Dr. Duke been talking about the phenomena of the Moranos, Jews who came over and they converted to Christianity, but they really all through South America and in Central America, they end up being the bankers or the financiers or the advisors to these really corrupt, Latin American governments. And I can't say for sure, but I wouldn't rule out that he's another one of those. He got very rich in the auto dealership and questionable car loan, 6-7 year car loan business, which, it kind of all fits together, but he's also a very aggressive pro-Israel. I think the Jewish strategy with Trump is anybody who's a goy who may not be fully on board with the Jewish agenda, they're going to go 100% lawfare and get them out of the Trump circle. I mean, you see this over and over again. Where, General Flynn to Roger Stone to, anybody, you can name a half dozen people, Sidney Powell and all of those people who tried to do stuff, stop the steal, who are not, those people all got hammered with lawfare. But the only people remaining are these ultra, Jewish activists. And, if you could defeat this Max Miller and Moreno, maybe that would give a chance for, get some of those people away from Trump. Otherwise, we're just going to replace Biden's minion with Trump's minion.
Yeah. And in some places, like in Pennsylvania, you mentioned Sidney Powell. There was a Dina Powell. Dina Powell was some Egyptian-born woman who used to party in Manhattan with Trump's daughter Ivanka, and she had become deputy national security advisor, and I think she was a source of some of these leaks that were coming out from Trump's national security team early on. And her husband, who was also an assistant national security advisor, something McCormick, and he's running against the incumbent Democrat in Pennsylvania. And it's like, well, the incumbent Democrats John something Casey, and he's not very bright, and he's a dependable Democratic vote. But then you got somebody else who's just like the pro neocon, pro war Republican, and you know, what kind of choice is that? So it kind of sucks. So it would be great if you had where there is primaries coming up, and Dennis Kucinich in particular, because Dennis Kucinich is a very dependable peace voice, if nothing else. But he's also somebody, even though he's thought of as a far left Democrat, he's somebody who, when Trump was elected, was saying, well, let's see what he has to offer. Let's see if there's something we can work with him on. When he was in Congress, he and Ron Paul cooperated on some things. He cooperated to an extent on the end the Fed, or at least audit the Fed legislation. So he's, and I've met him. He's a good person.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right.
Hey, and Patrick, you gotta look at the eclipse. You missed it. That's very bad. I mean, you really missed out.
I feel stupid, and that's new for me.
Thanks for joining the show, guys. Back tomorrow night. Back tomorrow at 12 noon with the Patrick and Jeremy Show Part 2 on the Bugle. Stay classic, Patrick, my friend.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.